Hello and welcome back to the Greater Greener Georgia podcast. I'm your host, Christian, and today we're here with Patty Durand, former president and executive director of Smart Energy Consumer Collaborative and candidate for Georgia Public Service Commission. And she's here to spark some insight into Georgia's energy grid. But before we plug into the conversation, don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe. And welcome, Patty. Thank you so much for joining the podcast. Please start by giving us a brief introduction. How did you get into this work?
Well, thank you for having me. I got into this work actually by attending a conference maybe 20 years ago, a long time ago, on Georgia's environmental quality. And at that conference, there was a book author who talked about climate change, and I hadn't heard of it. This was in maybe it was 25 years ago, maybe it was 1999 or 2000, something like that. And I hadn't heard of climate change, and I was shocked to hear about this big problem that was happening or looming. And I went back home and got a book and read more about it, and I realized that that's what I wanted to do for a career. At the time, I was working in business in IT, information technology, and I decided to leave that field and go into nonprofit management to work on environmental conservation and climate change work.
Wow, that's so it was a pivotal moment in your life, life-changing. And so tell us a little bit about the company that you used to be the CEO of. What was the goal of the company, or what did you all work on?
Right. Most recently, for the last 10 years, I worked at the Smart Energy Consumer Collaborative. I was the president and the first executive director of that organization. It was a nonprofit, a 501c3 nonprofit, whose mission was to research residential and small medium business consumers in relation to the electric grid. Because by all accounts, the grid is changing profoundly due to the internet and data and cloud computing and all the things that have disrupted all other industries, whether it's travel or publishing or news. The internet is also disrupting energy. It's just slower because it's regulated. And so our mission was to study, what do consumers want, what do they know, who's out there, and what can the grid do to meet those interests and wants and needs. And so we published probably 4 to 6 studies a year on all different topics.
Wow. So I feel like that's why I always talk about you like the expert, because you are the expert, but that's why that explains why you're the expert at what you do. So let's get into the meat of this. I'm really excited about this. Obviously, we've been working, for the viewers and listeners, we've been working very hard on a project with you. Tell us about Georgia Power's Plant Vogtle. Just go into what is Plant Vogtle? Let's start with that, because I think a lot of people don't know.
Yes, they don't. Plant Vogtle is a nuclear power plant that's been under construction since 2009. Actually, it was already in existence. The first two reactors were built in the 90s, reactors 1 and 2. And then in 2009, Georgia Power began construction for reactors 3 and 4. And so Plant Vogtle, when we refer to Plant Vogtle, we're usually just talking about those second set of reactors, because that's what just got finished on April 29th. And that project was extremely expensive, and that's what we're here to talk about.
Okay. And so when you say extremely expensive, give me a ballpark figure.
Yeah, well, I can give you an exact figure. Plant Vogtle is $36 billion, 36.8, and it's an insane amount of money. Actually, studies show the human brain cannot comprehend anything once it gets over about a billion. It's just too much.
And so $36 billion, where is that money? Who's paying for this? It's a very leading question for this, if you can't tell. Who is paying for this expensive price tag?
Georgia Power customers are paying, electric membership cooperative customers are paying, and municipal utility customers are paying. Anybody that pays an electric bill in Georgia is paying. And today we'll probably talk most about Georgia Power, because not only is Georgia Power the largest electricity provider in the state, providing electricity to more than 80% of residential customers, so the vast majority. But also, they're the ones that built the plant. So we'll focus a lot on them, but I don't want your listeners to come away thinking that if they're not a Georgia Power customer, they're not affected, because they very much are. Everyone is.
Mm-hmm. So when we put these numbers, so just since we're on the topic of Georgia Power customers, we hear this big number, 36 billion, and we think, well, what does that mean for me individually? How can we melt that down into a average bill, person's bill? What would you say like an average bill increase looks like?
For Georgia Power customers, if someone is paying an average bill, which in Georgia is about 1,080 kilowatt hours a month for an average size home, it's about a $20 a month increase. And that is an enormous increase on a bill for just a little bit of energy that Vogtle is providing Georgia Power. And people think, oh, it's a nuclear power plant. It's a gigantic amount of electricity. And it is a large amount, large-ish, but Georgia Power share is less than half. Georgia Power owns 45.7% of the output. So that 45.7% output is just 1,000 megawatts. And for 1,000 megawatts, which if you know anything about energy, is not that much, a $20 a month increase on your bill is enormous.
And you know, as a Georgia Power customer, I've looked at my bill and I've tried to see like where these costs you know, like I do this work and I have a hard time deciphering. So I can imagine the layperson or the average citizen is like, I don't know where this. Why can't I see these charges like broken down on my bill? Is that me or my?
No, it's by design. The Public Service Commission is doing a really bad job protecting the public interest in this state. And one of the things they have not done is required Georgia Power to disclose on their bill the components of what you're paying. So you can't know what's on your bill. When I first discovered this years ago, I called the commission to complain or to ask, why can't I make my bill add up? I don't understand these charges and they don't total. They said, oh, well, you can go to our website and go to our bill calculator. So that's what they do, is they host the information, which is ridiculous.
And it's making people have to go through an extra step of trying to find their information. So let's get into the report that you created. The report is called The Truth Behind Nuclear Power. Is that correct?
It's actually called Plant Vogtle, The Truth About Nuclear Energy in the United States. It's a very broad name because we cover a lot of things in the report.
It was very detailed. I've gotten the opportunity to read it. You're a brilliant person for being able to structure all of this because it is a lot of information in there. But I found myself very interested in a lot of this, and I didn't think that some of these things would pique my interest. A lot of these things, I thought, oh, this is gonna go over my head. And I find myself like really diving into, number one, I didn't know that this is the first nuclear power plant that's been built in North America in what, 30 years, is it?
Yes, 30 years.
And on top of that, the most expensive nuclear power plant worldwide.
Right, absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about nuclear energy too, because, you know, me personally, I grew up watching things like The Simpsons, and I see, oh, it's a nuclear power plant. Yeah. This is going to be like make three-eyed fish and things like this. But nuclear power isn't in and of itself bad. Would we say that? What were your takeaway on nuclear power?
I don't think it's great. I think there's a lot of risk to it that people dismiss. And then when something catastrophic happens, then they accept as, oh, well, like Fukushima. Like, to me, it's ridiculous that the country of Japan would build nuclear power in what's known as the Ring of Fire, which is this plate tectonic active area in that part of the world where there are a lot of earthquakes and tsunamis result in earthquakes. And the tsunami and earthquake happened, a tsunami resulted, and this enormous wave overtook the top of the cooling towers for Fukushima, destroyed its structural integrity, and there were massive explosions spewing radiation everywhere. And of course, now we have in the Ukraine, there's a Zaporizhzhia, I'm not sure how to say that one. That's become a subject of war with Russia taking over it, drones are bombing it, nothing has happened yet. And there's Chernobyl, and there's Three Mile, I'm like, I could keep going. And so all the risk is not great. Then you have the waste, which there's leakage, there's tritium leakage, there's other leakage into the water that causes human harm. And then there's climate change. And we reference that in the report. There's new recommendations out that utilities need to take climate change into account for when they build nuclear, because Climate change has increased the severity and frequency of big storm events, and nobody has factored that into the regulations and structure of nuclear. But even more risky and more certain is droughts. And there are much more severe droughts. And last year, I think 3, but maybe 5 nuclear plants in Europe had to be taken offline because the drought caused the water source that cools those nuclear plants to drop so low that they couldn't cool them. And in the U.S., in North Carolina, there's a Lake Norman, I think it's called. That lake was within 0.5 inch last summer of shutting down that power plant in North Carolina. Those things are happening now.
Wow. And so, and I don't want to misquote the report, but I do remember there being something in there about the U.S. government being responsible for taking care of the nuclear waste. Is that correct?
Yes.
But the U.S. government maybe missed their own renewal of these of this. Explain a little bit about that and what could that possibly mean for Plant Vogtle here in Georgia?
Well, the nuclear waste is stored on site at all the nuclear plants right now because the federal government has not been able to find a centralized repository for it, in part because no state wants it, and also in part because transporting it across state lines. No state wants to be the place where nuclear waste is transported across. What if there's a train derailment? What if there's a truck accident? Like, there's no safe way to handle the most deadly, product, I don't know what to call uranium, in the world. It's so deadly and devastating to life that it really shouldn't be messed with the way we mess with it. And it's not even necessary. Nuclear plants just produce steam. The process boils water to produce steam to turn turbines to produce electricity. That's how gas plants work. That's how coal plants work. This is all really old technology. This is 20th century stuff created before the iPhone. And here we are acting like it's something new. It's not. It's a dinosaur and it needs to stop. And we need to move on to modern technologies like virtual power plants or distributed energy or rooftop solar, or I could go on. There's just so many exciting things that we're not doing that are being crowded out by nuclear.
Especially when we talk about almost a $40 billion price tag.
Yeah.
And we're left with nuclear waste that stays radioactive for
hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah, there are much better ways to steam water, essentially.
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard a lot recently about, and I'm probably going to botch this, but where they're getting steam from underground
geothermal
reservoirs. Geothermal. I think that would be a much better use of $40,000.
And you know why geothermal hasn't been done much? Is because it's considered too expensive. And yet it's far less expensive than nuclear. But the game they play is they lowball the cost estimate, which Georgia Power claimed Plant Vogtle would cost $14 billion, and it costs $36 billion, which, and you said, you repeated my words to me, it's the most expensive nuclear plant on Earth, and it is, but it's also the most expensive power plant of any type on Earth. It's actually worse than that. I couldn't find anything of any structure, whether it's a building, a dam, a bridge. There's nothing that approaches $36 billion that any state has built on the planet that I could find.
So, number one, so many questions coming to mind. Number one, walk us through why this got to this level. If it originally started out, as you said, 14 was supposed to be the original price tag. How did we get there? What are some of the things that happened along the way that made this price tag go up? That's the first part of the question. And second part of the question, why wouldn't they just bail out at a certain point?
Yeah, those are great questions. The first part of the question is a battle royale, I'll say. There's a lot of disagreement over why the cost went so high. But that's the purpose of this report, is that we document the reasons. A lot of the reasons that other people give are guesses based on nothing. For instance, they'll say, oh, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is overburdened with regulations. It's overregulated. It's just impossible to build without all these costs. Or the state has overregulated it. Or it's the first of a kind. We've never built this before, so that's why it costs so much. All these reasons are not true. And we document in our report, and I encourage people to read the report, to go to your website and read the report, because not only do we document in the report, but we have put screen grabs in there so people can see for themselves some of the incompetencies. But there were five main reasons that we put in the report about why the costs were so extreme. And I won't go into all of them, hoping people will choose to read the report, but one or two of them includes things like poor site management, poor on-site construction management, with managers that did not do a good job, that were incompetent, and some of the decisions they made were very poor. They hired contractors who were friends instead of professionals in one case. In another case, they purchased components for the plant that were allowed to sit in the weather uncovered without a chain of custody for a decade. So when they went to use them, of course they didn't work, and they had to be repurchased, and those were really expensive. So that's one big block of cost overrun reasons. Another one is poor executive management. The executives would hire inappropriate people to run the projects online. There were times that the scheduling of the project, you know, when you get into big business, you've got scheduling software and professionals who manage the schedule and who do the critical path tasks and assignments. All that was very poorly done and very expensive. In fact, the schedule was usually a day late for every day that it was supposed to be delivered. That's 100%. It was awful to read these reports. And, you know, you think about fist fights in bars, you know what that is. But what you don't know is when professionals fist fight in reports. The reports that I would read on the Public Service Commission website from professional nuclear engineers who were hired to monitor the progress of the project were so hard that I would read that thinking, wow, are you kidding me? That is as hard a punch as anybody could throw. Like, for instance, one of them said, the project managers materially misled the Public Service Commission staff for more than 10 years, leading to staff making missed decisions and improving project components that were false. And I'm just thinking, what's another word for materially misled? Okay, I know, it's called lie. I'm like, wow, that is some strong wording.
Right. So, I mean, it's so many moving pieces here. How does our Public Service Commission play into, or I just can't imagine the people that are supposed to be protecting us in things like this. Could they have done anything about this?
Absolutely, they could have. When Plant Vogtle was licensed and began construction in 2009, there was a twin plant, as we call it, in South Carolina called Plant Summer. It began construction and was licensed. The same technology, the Westinghouse AP1000 reactor design. They hired the same firm, Westinghouse, to manage the site construction. And everything was managed the same. It was also an expansion of a current operating nuclear plant. So what happened was immediately cost overruns were severe and rapid. And by 2017, they were so severe that Westinghouse literally went bankrupt. And that allowed both states to pursue a decision to cancel the project if they wanted to. And South Carolina did cancel. They decided that the cost overruns were too severe. What they were promised was not happening, and they were out. And then Georgia had a completely different decision. Hearings were heard. And during those hearings, professionals were brought in from all over the country, again, energy professionals, nuclear energy professionals, and also PSC staff who were assigned to provide they hire professionals there too, energy experts. And everyone said, cancel this plant. And except for one, you know, someone from the nuclear energy industry said, keep going. But everybody else said, cancel. And then public opposition was intense, because this is a public hearing paid for with state taxes. This is a public decision. Commissioners are public servants. They're elected. So during the public process, opposition to continuing was like 60-1, very strong against. But the commission nonetheless ignored all that and approved it. And one of the things we have a fairly extensive section in the report is why the commission didn't protect Georgians. And key reasons include that they serve in office for too long. 6 years is so long that it is difficult for voters to hold them accountable. Another key reason is that they are not even Georgia Power customers. They are EMC customers. And so they don't, I'm a Georgia Power customer too. We don't have any representation on the commission. And a third reason is that they don't have an energy background. When they're appointed between elections by the governor because of being a donor to the governor's party or to the governor himself. And then they serve, we know who they really serve, the governor. How could it be otherwise? And there are many more, probably six more reasons besides those, but there's a whole host of problems. And this is really disturbing and sad because, you know, monopolies are illegal in the United States and have been since the Sherman Antitrust Act of 1864, because at that time, businesses would buy each other and then crowd out competitors and become monopolies. And we saw as a country what that did. They were aggressive, they crushed competitors, they harmed customers, they price gouged, they became bad actors. So they're illegal now, except for utilities. And in exchange for having a monopoly, they must agree to be regulated by the state. Every state has a state commission, every state has at least one monopoly utility. And the deal is the state protects customers through their state commission. Only if your state commission isn't doing it, what do you have? You have an out of control monopoly that's a bad actor. And that's what we have in Georgia.
And that's exactly what it sounds like. And, you know, there have been, I've seen the commercials. I've heard like people from Georgia. I attended the hearings. So I got to hear the speakers of the representatives for Georgia Power speak. And their reason for going so hard on this, one of them was, well, there's a huge demand for energy here in Georgia. Like, we need it. We have a flux of people. We're borrowing power from whatever. We can't meet these energy demands. Based on some of the findings in your report, and once again, I don't want to go too deep in the report because I do want people to read it. But that was one of the things I found really interesting. The demand for energy has really been plateaued
For 20 years. Absolutely, yeah. That was a surprise to me, too, when I was looking at Georgia Power's energy sales. In 2009, I forget the exact number, something like 85 million megawatts. And in 2023, guess what it was? 85 million megawatts. And yet, to justify the building Plant Vogtle, Georgia Power submitted growth projections of 4% annually. Not only did they not have 4% annual growth annually, they didn't even have it over 15 years. They didn't have any growth over 15 years. Now, will there be future growth from data centers and AI and cryptocurrency? Probably. I'm not going to deny that there isn't growth, but it hasn't happened yet. And I think there needs to be accountability for their false load growth projections that they've submitted already. There needs to be an accounting, a report, a commission, a study, or something. Instead, there's just silence. The commission ignores it and then accepts their new growth projections without any question, which is, I think it's disrespectful to the people of Georgia, because that is their job, is to manage this, and they're not doing it.
Is there anything that the people of Georgia, Georgia Power customers, can do right now to hold these people accountable, whether that's the Public Service Commission or Georgia Power directly?
Well, it's a little bit tough right now because the state of Georgia has canceled PSC elections. And I think, and many people that I speak with think, it's to protect commissioners from the consequences of these decisions from voters. For not only for Plant Vogtle, which is raising bills $20 a month for a tiny amount of energy, but also in April, we saw the lie exposed that Vogtle was built for clean energy. It wasn't. Vogtle was built for profits, because Georgia Power asked for and received approval to expand fossil fuel-based energy by twice what Vogtle delivers, 4,400 megawatts. And they've been approved to build three new gas plants, which are dirty, and we cannot have a stable climate if we're expanding fossil fuels, and to keep coal plants online that are scheduled for closure. Now they won't close. And they've even been approved to use oil to burn, you know, steam for electricity. I mean, who's doing oil in 2023? Nobody. It's a tragedy. And there was a lot of, you were there, there was a lot of intensity, a lot of pain, and a lot of anger at the public hearings from doctors and other professional public health officials coming down to speak about the devastation of heat and droughts and floods and mosquito-borne and other illnesses that expand with climate change. A lot of teens and college students came down to talk about their future with an unstable climate, from everyone in between. And the commissioners ignored all of them. And so to protect them from their votes, I think that's why elections are canceled.
And it seems like we're really setting ourselves up for a horrible situation. And by ourselves, I mean just the state of Georgia. If you just told me that the number one threat to nuclear power plants are drought, and yet we're increasing the climate, exactly. It's like it's setting us up for a really precarious
situation. It reminds me of the irresponsible decision that Japan made about Fukushima on an earthquake zone. We're doing the same thing with our decisions with droughts and building nuclear and then expanding fossil fuels. It's ridiculous.
I could talk to you all day about this, but we want folks to go read that report.
Yes,
and I will tell the listeners and the viewers where we can find the report. But I have one more segment that I like to do with everyone, and I think you're going to be great at this. I call this my policy pitch segment. If you could pitch one piece of policy to Georgia state legislators, what that could change the political, social, and economic landscape of Georgia, what would it be and why?
I would ask the state to reinstate the Consumer Utility Council, which was defunded in 2009, suspiciously right when Vogel was getting its permission to proceed. That, if we'd have had a CUC, that person would have been at the commission advocating on behalf of residential and small, medium business interests. And we don't have anyone there protecting us or lobbying for us. Businesses have lobbyists. Industrials have lobbyists. Georgia Power has lobbyists. But we don't have anyone. And the loss of that state department, which is independently funded and does not operate in the commission, can't be overstated, because without that person, and they have staff, so those few people, that allowed Georgia Power to, for instance, continue Plant Vogtle without any customer protections from cost overruns, which they should have even at least added in 2017 when Westinghouse went bankrupt, but they didn't. And now those people would have advocated for residential customers during the rate case, and I mean during the fossil fuel expansion case in April. And we didn't have that. So that would be one key thing. And I'm back to your earlier question about what can anybody do. And I said it's hard because there's no election. But I do want to pitch Georgia conservation voters, because you all have a great PSC accountability program. And I would encourage listeners to tag into that program, subscribe to get emails, pay attention to what you're doing, because when elections are held, GCV is going to be in the forefront of endorsing candidates, alerting people when the elections are. And we've really got to turn out these commissioners, at the very least Commissioner Eccles and Commissioner Pridemore. They are the worst two. They'll be up for election soon, next. And I think if they lose their seats, being as vocal and outspoken as they are with a lot of misinformation, that's a shot across the bow to the other commissioners that the gig is up and it's time for you to start taking care of customers. There has to be if they're not defeated, then there's no accountability. Then why would they change anything? They wouldn't.
And not to put you on the spot, but when those elections do come up, how can we bank on you running? Because it sounds like you need to be the person in that seat with your experience.
I left the job I described to you at the Smart Energy Consumer Collaborative in 2021 to launch a campaign. It's a statewide, at least we would like it to be district-wide, but right now it's a statewide election. And I was told you need an 18-month runway to run a statewide election to raise enough money. And I don't know anything about elections. I've never been this kind of person that wants to serve in public office. I'm only running because I can't stand what I see happening at the commission. And I know too much. I can't just ignore it. And I left my position because I was tired of complaining. I was tired of being mad. I thought I'm always wanting someone to do something. Well, that someone is me. So I'll run. And I will run again because it is wrong what's happening. And I can't watch it and just do nothing. Just imagine your own field, if anybody is listening in their career field, and they watched corruption and incompetence, things that are harming people happen, they would take action too. That's why I'm running.
Well, thank you so, so much, Patty, for your time. I know you're a busy person and have things to do. I do want to remind our viewers and our listeners that you can find Patty's report, Plant Vogel, The True Cost of Nuclear Power in the U.S. at gcvedfund.org/plantvogel. And I'll put that on the screen and in the bio for folks. And as always, thank you for joining the Greater Greener Georgia podcast.
Thank you.